Welcome back to Chin Music, our show at TalkNorth.com. The lineup today, Roy Smalley, former Twins star, current Twins broadcaster. I'm Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune, and Brandon Morton is our producer. Let's dive right into it. I'm fascinated, Roy, in a camp without a lot of real drama, where we know pretty much what the opening day roster is going to look like with maybe a couple spots at the end of the bullpen still in flux. Louis Varland, to me, he's the one who could make something dramatic happen here. He could end up being their fifth starter. He could end up being their sixth starter. He could end up being one of the better relievers in Major League Baseball. What do you make of Louis Varland, his current situation, his current role, and his upside?
Well, I think it's a great question. Excuse me. And I think that you're right about the magnitude of which way things could go with the Twins, you know, depending and with him. I was concerned about when he was a starter, I was concerned about his the velocity on his fastball relative to the lack of secondary pitches that he had, really quality secondary pitches for a starter. But I loved his, you know, bulldog mentality. And then he goes to the bullpen and he picks up literally 3 or 4 miles an hour. I mean, just throwing the ball by guys, which mitigates a little bit of the secondary pitch issue. He is throwing some other things that look like it's going to be better, changeups a little better. The cutter or slider, whatever he's going to call it, looks like it could be better. Certainly good enough for relief. And so then all of a sudden you start thinking about from the sixth inning on and the arms that are going to come out of that bullpen, if he is in fact a bullpen guy, you're looking at big arm from Louis Varland, and then big stuff from Brock Stewart. And, all of a sudden, not even talking about the left-handers they have out there, not even talking about just talking about the big arms all of a sudden, not talking about, all the other guys that we thought were going to be right there. Then all of a sudden you put Louis Varland in there and he could climb right up to the eighth inning, setup guy with that stuff. So it's really hard to know for sure, where they're going to, what the biggest need is going to be. I don't think that they're going to want him to be a sixth starter. I just don't think they're going to be that many, that many times of that kind of need. But as a later inning bullpen guy, that bullpen just gets, it just looks nastier and nastier.
No doubt about it. And pardon my dog barking in the background. That's just what he does. We call it ambient sound in the business. I want to talk more about Varland. I do want to remind you, you are listening to TalkNorth.com. You are listening to Chin Music, our baseball show at TalkNorth.com. We have the best sports lineup in town in terms of analysts and co-hosts. We have outdoor content, variety content. We appreciate you listening. If you do like this show, please subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the easiest way to listen. Same thing for any other show you like at the network. We are coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services studio. We want to thank Aquarius Home Services and also our newest sponsor, Your Boat Club. So DeSclafani has dealt with some elbow soreness. He does have, I would say he has a bit of an injury history, but I think almost all pitchers have an injury history, just the nature of the modern position. And I want to see Varland in the bullpen, but I get it. If DeSclafani's not ready, then Varland is such an easy fit there. Do you think there is a way for him to channel some of the relief dominance into a starter's role?
Potentially, yes. It's just, I believe now more than ever, secondary pitches, two other pitches besides fastball are absolutely required I mean, just absolutely necessary. And so, I mean, think about it, even Pablo Lopez, for example, as good as he was last year and as fun as he is to watch pitch, he was a fastball changeup guy. And when he got that big breaking ball, when he figured out the big breaking ball, whether you want to call it a sweeper or a slurve or a slider, whatever you want to call it, that made a huge difference. And when he was throwing that, and you could see it during the course of the season, when he didn't have that, everything else got worse because the hitters kind of checked that off. Said, "I'm not worrying about that," and they were just on fastball. And fastball changeup, if you're not pinpointing your fastball, not good enough. And when he didn't have the slurve, the sweeper, it looked like he was pressing to make perfect pitches, and he was getting behind and walking people. That was kind of the MO for the outings that weren't so good. The outings that were good, all three of those pitches were, he looked like he felt like he could throw any of the three of them at any time, any count, to any hitter, and not only throw them for a strike, but have them be in a good spot. All that is just to say that even guys that have, good secondary pitches, if they're not good on a given day, then they're not going to be nearly as good. And for Varland, if you're a starter, I mean, you're gonna go back to losing a couple miles an hour in your fastball because you can't be max effort all the time as a good long-term consistent starter. You've got to have at least two others, and I don't know yet. I don't know that whether Louis has those in his repertoire right now, right at this very minute to be a starter. Just haven't seen enough of that yet.
I'm also intrigued that Louis thinks, he said this publicly last year, that he'd rather be a starter and starters make more money. I don't know. I don't know what the better career path is. I've covered so many people, especially with the Twins, who struggled as starters and then became lights out relievers and had long, productive, lucrative careers. I mean, Eddie Guardado he struggled as a starter. He became an all-star closer. LaTroy Hawkins struggled as a starter. He ended up pitching 22 seasons or something because he figured out his role and how to best suit himself to that role. Rick Aguilera is a starter turned reliever. Joe Nathan was a shortstop turned starter turned reliever. I mean, I don't know that being a starting pitcher is necessarily the better route.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that either. And relief pitchers tend to last longer than starters. So if he's worried about making more money, I mean, you pitch 22 years, that ends up being a lot of money over the course of two decades. I think generally speaking, the injury bug is less. I don't know if that's backed up by any kind of statistical data, but so maybe I'm full of it there, but that's what it seems to me. I think what you do is you just accept the role that a club would need you to be at the time, and then grow into that. Or if something were to happen, here's the thing. And you talked about him being Varland being a sixth starter potentially. I think what's eminently possible is that one of the starters goes down or is ineffective, and then they start lengthening Louis out and letting him, be the next guy up. I mean, that's eminently possible.
I also think in modern baseball, if you're using Louis as a reliever and he's ready to pitch up to two innings at a time, I mean, this is one team that I could see the starter. I mean, I don't like the whole opener strategy in general, but I could certainly see it with this team where you have limited starting arms you trust and you have a lot of bullpen arms you like. I mean, that's where I could see telling Louis, okay, yeah, we're going to start you, but we're not looking for five innings. We're looking for you to dominate as long as you can. Then we're going to bring in, Brock Stewart or Griffin Jacks or somebody else is going to dominate. I mean, you can piece together a pretty good game that way with this staff.
No question about it. And that would be the ideal way to lengthen Louis out too, right? I mean, if you're troubled about your fifth starter, and for a while you start Louis as just the opener, and then he pitches, you know, two innings, and then he pitches two more innings, and then he pitches three innings or three and a third or four, or, you know, whatever, you just start lengthening him out and see how he reacts to that. It's hard on him. In the same way I'm talking about, you need to have these other two pitches. And if you're going to come in the seventh or eighth in a situation where they really need a strikeout, you know, chances are you're not as concerned with making great pitches with your secondary pitches. You're going to come with the number one and, you know, show people something else, but then, you know, try to throw high fastballs by people. And so if he does start as a reliever, there's less opportunity for him to work on those secondary pitches as much as he would. And so that's kind of the catch-22 for him.
Right. I find Louis and his situation to be fascinating, mainly because of the way he blew people away at the end of last year. There's another player I find, a couple more players I find fascinating. I want to ask Roy about, get his breakdown. We do want to remind you, we're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services Studios, and we want to thank Aquarius Home Services.
Scott for Aquarius, wishing you a happy new year. The new year often means a fresh start. How about your furnace? Does it need a fresh start? It's been working hard, and we all know there's a lot of winter left to go. With your safety and comfort as our top priority, Aquarius Home Services is offering $98 off any furnace repair. Be worry-free with your furnace. We're here to help, and just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. Aquarius, earning the right to be recommended.
We also want to tell you more about our newest sponsor, Your Boat Club.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with Your Boat Club. Your Boat Club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, Your Boat Club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
All right, next fascinating player up for me, Royce Lewis. I love pretty much everything about this guy, and I have seen some people who really break things down mechanically suggest that he has a little bit of a hitch in his swing that might limit his effectiveness over time. I'll be honest, I don't see it. And maybe it's because I covered Dave Winfield, who had a massive hitch in his swing and hit 300, you know, got 3,000 hits. I just see a good hitter. Do you see any mechanical flaws that might hamper him?
You know, if he's got, you know, what they're calling a hitch, it's a little one. There's a little bit of delay, it seems to me, sometimes with between landing on this front foot in launch position with his hands back, and then delivering the big end of the bat, there's a little bit of a lag there sometimes. But I've also seen him turn pretty good fastballs to left field, in the seats of left field, and I've seen him hit the ball off of and over the right center field fence, and I've seen him, you know, rise to, we all have seen him rise to the occasion with the bases loaded, you know, several times. I think that he's going to be fine. I think he'll figure out, you know, the pitchers will make adjustments. They started doing it toward the end of last year. And that is, you know, show him hard stuff up or maybe in, and then get him to chase sliders down and away. How many guys have we seen have 3 years like that? And I'll give you the best example is Torrey Hunter, just flailing and flailing and flailing at sliders. I mean, just couldn't. He was so on the fastball to left field and just could not react, did not see the slider soon enough. And, I mean, we just see a lot of guys figure that out. I think that if – Royce Lewis does have a little bit of an issue there. He will figure that out. I think that the lag that I see is either temporary at times during the season, or it's eminently fixable. The one thing that he does, just like Torrey and everybody else, I mean, literally everybody, is you every once in a while you get on the fastball, or you start worrying for whatever reason, your mechanics are off a little bit, you're not feeling as good, whatever, you're late on the fastball, which makes you hurry up, and then your mechanics go a little bit south, and you're vulnerable to breaking balls and all that stuff. So, that's just what hitters do, and they're going to, they're going to go through the up and down waves of being right on and getting pitches you can handle, and then getting pitched tough to for a while. It throws things off, and then you find it again. He's got too much strength with the bat in his hand, too much talent, too much really solid mental makeup. I just don't think whatever it is that anybody's seeing, I don't think it will derail his road to real stardom.
Well, that would have been my answer. I'm glad to hear that you agree with me on this one. And Torrey Hunter is a great example. He got himself out for so long early in his career, and as soon as he stopped swinging at the pitch, the slider in the dirt that he couldn't hit anyway, man, he turned around. And you know who else is like that? Byron Buxton. Man, he used to, all you had to do is throw something junky on the outside corner. He was going to swing and miss it. And as soon as he started not swinging at that pitch, which again, you can't do much with anyway, all of a sudden the ball is rocketing out of the ballpark.
And you're going to see that from Byron again. He's going to go through streaks where he's going to swing at that pitch. I mean, that's when you're a right-handed hitter and you're facing right-handed pitching that with good stuff, with somebody who can throw the ball in the inside part of the plate with the fastball and the outside corner of the slider, you're going to get, see right-hand hitters make outs or get themselves out on a regular basis. And that's just the way it is. And hitters have to adjust. And the one thing that I think Royce Lewis will do probably better than Byron has been able to do. Byron is just on the fastball. He just is. And if you throw him a breaking ball strike, he's got a chance to hit it 9 miles. But he's swinging at that. He's on the fastball. He'll swing at the breaking ball. If it's in the strike zone, he'll hit it. If it's not, he'll swing and miss it. But he is swinging. I think Royce Lewis has the kind of mental makeup to say, to do what Paul Molitor did, for example. When Paulie told me one time, he said, man, after my first year and a half, I said to myself, they got some real breaking balls up here. I got to figure out how to hit these breaking balls. And he changed, and he would look for them, right? He worked on hitting them, and he would look for them. I think not every hitter likes to do that. And I think what Royce Lewis has the ability to do, both physically and mentally, is to say, okay, this guy's going to – he's going to show me fastballs, but he's going to try to get me out of the breaking ball. I'm looking for a slider. And when you look for the slider – if it's a strike, you kill it. If it's a ball, you take it. It's when you're swinging at bad sliders, it's because you're on the fastball and jumping out there early. But if you're willing to take a fastball down the middle occasionally, because you don't really think that that's what the pitcher meant to do, you really think he means to show you that pitch and get you out with breaking balls, and you have the wherewithal to just stay on the breaking ball. Then you start tattooing those all over the ballpark, and pitchers come back around to fastball for you again, and that which is what you want in the first place.
Right. One more fascinating player on my list I want to get to today, Brock Stewart. Incredible performance when he was healthy last year. Did have to go on the injured list for a while. He's another guy who could be your eighth inning guy, or he could get hurt, or he could falter, but I just love the stuff. What do you see when you look at Brock Stewart? How much faith do you have in him right now?
Well, the first thing that I would say is that there's two things that I fervently wish for the Twins this year. This is a blessing. May you have these two things. May you have Byron Buxton healthy all year long, and may you have Brock Stewart healthy and throwing that stuff he's got all year long. I think that he is potentially absolutely dominant. I think he could, if he's healthy and he's throwing his stuff for strikes, he could be your closer. Well, they happen to have a closer. He could be, your setup guy. And we've talked about this before. Mariano Rivera set up John Wetland for the Yankees, for
two innings at a time sometimes.
Sometimes two innings at a time. And we know what kind of closer that Rivera, became. And I think that, with Brock Stewart, potentially the eighth inning dominant stuff before Yoan Duran, I just think it's fun to think about. And that's what I was thinking about that earlier with Louis Varland, and talking about the big arms. And, you got Duran and you got Brock Stewart and you have Griffin Jackson and Louis Varland. And then you mix in, we don't know what Alcala is going to do. And then you have
Topa.
He's going to be an earlier inning guy, probably. And Caleb Fieldbar is going to, set up the last, the last two or three innings as well. So, I just think that bullpen is just so potentially lights out nasty. And Brock Stewart is the best example of that. I think I've mentioned this before, but it's worth repeating. I was watching Brock Stewart's first appearance as a Twin on television. And he came in and nobody knows anything about him and except where he's been and, this and that. And he comes in and I think he was pitching against the Red Sox. Just absolutely dominated people. And when I say dominated, I don't just mean, you can tell if I'm watching hitters from the center field camera on television, I can see, I think people, you can see when guys are just totally uncomfortable, when, pitch after pitch, they're going, what the heck? And that's what it looked like. It looked like it wasn't just that he got him out in seemingly dominant stuff fashion. It looked like the hitters hated being up there every pitch. And the camera just happened to be on the pitcher and the catcher as they came in the dugout. And the catcher came in first and after that stuff. And Christian Vasquez, and he looked at Rocco and made this face like, yikes. and it was like that was validation. When a catcher comes in and says, and shows a face like, had no idea we had this kind of stuff coming up there, that's a pretty good indication. And that's the way Brock Stewart was when he was healthy, every time he went out there, as long as he was throwing strikes. And I think the world of his stuff.
So I remembered him being absolutely dominant last year. I didn't remember to the extent to which he dominated. I just looked up his game log. He pitched in 28 regular season games last year. He gave up runs in one of his 28 outings last year.
And I'll bet you it's because he walked a couple of people that one time.
I'll look it up.
He's just got the kind of stuff that goes up there. If it's in the strike zone, everybody's going to have to figure out if he doesn't walk people, he doesn't give up the long ball. He doesn't give up, too many extra base hits. They're going to have to string together six hits against stuff like, to have a big inning against that kind of stuff. It's just not happening.
So he did not give up a run last year until May 29th at Houston. He gave up a home run, two earned runs, actually zero walks, two strikeouts in an inning. And that is the only regular season game in which he gave up a run. Houston is the only major league team, regular season or postseason, that scored a run against Brock Stewart last year.
Well, there you have it. I have seen him struggle. But he, with control sometimes, but he, So I assumed that maybe that was the issue, but I've also, most of the, as evidenced by your game logs, I mean, when he has struggled with control, he's had the ability, and this is important too. He's had the, you know, the insides to figure it out, to come back and get out of innings. Even you wish he'd have a 9-pitch inning and he'd have a 20-pitch inning, but he figured it out.
Altuve hit a 2-run homer against him in the 7th inning of that game, May 29th. Twins came back and won it in extra innings, so it didn't even really cost him. But yeah, he's ridiculous. He's ridiculous. And yeah. What is his better pitch, the fastball or the slider?
Well, you know, it's a coin toss. I mean,
yeah.
They set each other up so well. So he throws 97, right? I mean, he can throw harder than that, but let's just call it 97. It's got filthy horizontal movement. So he's just punishing right-handers. That fastball just 97 miles an hour running hard in on somebody. Then he got the slider that he throws hard, that goes the other direction. He can flip up a curveball every once in a while. He's got a changeup. I mean, it's nasty, nasty stuff. And whether it's right-handed or left-handed, it works the same way. You're throwing 97 to a left-hand hitter, crowding him with that, or pitching up in the strike zone with that, then throwing a back foot slider, and they're not any more comfortable either. So I think him being healthy, as I said, I mean, I'll take Buxton. You tell me Buxton and Brock Stewart are going to be healthy all year. I say 90 plus wins.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Roy and I sometimes, and with Lavelle also, sometimes veer off into the world of pop culture and music. Anything you're listening to or watching these days you want to bring up?
No, you know, I've been in kind of a lull here in that regard. I haven't been, things have been busy. I haven't been listening to an awful lot of new music. When I get a chance to listen to some music working out or something, it's been kind of old standbys, but so I haven't really, and you know, I've watched some movies. My wife had surgery on her ankle. She's hobbling around here with a cast on and not been able to do much, and so we have been watching some stuff. I gotta tell you, we haven't really found anything that we've liked very much, so pop culture's passed me by here for a couple of weeks.
Well, it's funny because my daughter works in the music industry and is always telling me, you got to listen to this new band. I'm like, I'm still listening to all the old bands, you know, it's like, and so I'm going to give you two blasts from the past that will confirm my age. The first is I've been listening when I'm driving around a lot, and when I'm not listening to chin music, of course, I've been listening to a lot of U2 lately. And if you listen to their Sirius channel or their catalog, there's one of those bands. They sounded like a gospel band for a while. They sounded like a punk band for a while. They sounded completely innovative. They sounded like electronica at times. The scope and the breadth of their musical catalog is astonishing, especially when you listen to, you know, different clips from different times in their history. The other thing is I had a day last week where podcasts are done, columns are done, didn't feel like, I don't know. I think I'd already worked out. I'm just like, okay, I actually have an hour or two here to kill, and I don't want to watch another sporting event. I put on The Wire, started watching from the beginning again, and was just reminded how brilliant it is. Just how brilliant the writing is, how vivid the characters are. And my God, I'm very proud that a refugee from the newspaper business basically was the driving force behind that show.
You know, you're right about The Wire. I watched that a couple of years ago, front to back, and my wife just wondered what in the world I was doing. I went downstairs. I've got a big screen and kind of the big room downstairs, and I mean after dinner I said, okay, I'll see you at bedtime. I mean, I was absolutely addicted to that show for all the reasons that you say. The character development in that show, and the writing, you have to have great writing for a great show, and the writing was great. But the character development and what those actors brought to their, all of them brought to their roles was, it's hard for me to know whether The Wire or Justified is the best thing I've ever watched in terms of a series like that. Those are my two favorites.
Well, you have great taste because Justified is, you know, The Wire is, I guess, you know, it's more sociologically meaningful, but Justified is just the writing, the characters, the sense of place. And that's one thing they both have in common. So many, you know, cop procedurals, cop stories, Law and Order type things. They're all just based on the streets of New York and they all look exactly the same. Or if they're trying to change it up, they'd move to Los Angeles. You know you're in Kentucky when you're watching Justified. You know you're in Baltimore when you're watching The Wire.
Yeah, no, The Wire was really more intense in every way, and all in the sociologically, and I wanted to say the messaging. It wasn't a message so much as it was the vividness of the reality of of that was, you know, was, I mean, Justified was a, it was a, that was a bit of escapism for me, as well as it was done. I mean, that was not nearly as intensely serious as everything about The Wire. But, you know, to your point, I mean, the two of them were just absolutely first rate.
No doubt about it. Great stuff from Roy. Thank you, Roy. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. Again, if you like the show, please subscribe. Next week, I'm out of town. Roy Lavelle will be your hosts on the show. Please tune in. I swear it's going to be a great season to be a Twins fan and to listen to this podcast.